This is the 14th of October?
I believe so.
Okay.
It was this morning.
Yeah. This afternoon, it's 14th.
Fine morning.
Okay, we're going to get back to the main presentation here. Jeff Logolo. Right there, yes. He's going to talk to us about the Berkshire Bond 3.0. Jeff was a longtime employee of Sun, and no longer, unfortunately, but he's also the chair of the Open
Solaris.
Chair of the Open Solaris Users Group, which meets once a month. It's also part of our organization, and so we always have some really good, interesting presentations on Open Solaris, so certainly come and visit that. But right now, we're going to hear about VirtualBox. I'm going to go to Jeff.
Thank you. Now, Stan, I want to know, did you record your presentation? You always ask, can I record yours?
No. I forgot.
Okay.
Can we start with an open question?
Certainly.
What's the minimum hardware requirement for this?
No matter how much you have, you'll always wish you had more.
Of course.
The answer to that question is easily obtainable on the website, which I will feature in my presentation.
Okay.
All right. Let me start with this question. How many people have run virtual?
Timing.
Easy answer?
All right, trivia, what was it?
That's Sonic the Hedgehog.
All right, yeah. The t-shirt I'm giving to you.
Say, I've got that on my Wii.
Okay, where was I? Okay, how many people have run VirtualBox before? Many. How many people have not and came here to, wow, I wasn't expecting to see that number of hands. Okay.
For which?
People have never run VirtualBox before. People are in VMware. So a lot of people have done that. Thank you very much. Here's what I will tell you. I mean, trying out VirtualBox is pretty easy as long as you have minimum hardware requirements. And frankly, memory is kind of the one thing that you'll wish that you had to do this. So if you don't have a lot of memory on your computer, it can be very frustrating to download VirtualBox and try to create a virtual machine and realize you don't have enough memory to do what you want to do. Like, for example, install Solaris with the ZFS root file system. But another topic for next week. Yes?
Can I pose a couple of real easy questions regarding hardware requirements?
Okay.
Dual core minimum? Hyper threading necessary?
Absolutely not and absolutely not.
Unless you want to run a gas set that is picky.
Right.
And there are ways around that.
OpenBSD.
I have figured out how to do the OpenBSD on non-virtualized. There's a setting you can use very way down deep.
I knew someone was going to ask about BSD, and there's actually good news on that front. Let me get to the slides about BSD. Well, I'll talk about it, but there's good news for people that are BSD users. I'm sorry I don't have specifics about hardware requirements, but I can tell you this. VirtualBox runs under Windows, Linux, Solaris, and macOS. So there are four different platforms on which it runs. And it can host almost any operating system that runs on Intel or AMD hardware, with the exception of the macOS. Except for macOS Server. Very good. Good trivia. So that should kind of cover what it can run and what it can run on, with the caveat that I haven't talked specifics about the hardware. But generally speaking, it doesn't require a multi-core CPU on which to run. I mean, it runs on a laptop, and I'll be doing that here.
And when you use the word under, you mean on top of an operating system that's already installed?
That's correct. That's correct. VirtualBox is a product that's primarily positioned as a desktop virtualization solution. However, what I'm going to spend my time doing demonstrations today is how to put it on a server and do server things with it. All right, so that's kind of where I'm trying to head to, on the assumption that so many people had already run this on their laptop or a desktop that they might want to see something different. Okay. The most recent major release of VirtualBox is VirtualBox 3.0. One of the things that sets this apart was it was the first, in the industry first, that they allow SMP of guests that have up to 32 cores. So we're used to seeing, you know, guest virtual machines that are limited to maybe 2 cores, and I'm not sure what VMware currently supports. Anybody? So I've got a couple of VMware experts. But the bottom line is, with VirtualBox 3, you can have up to 32 cores on a virtual machine. And that's actually virtual cores, right? If you have a machine that has four cores, you could actually install a guest and tell it that it has eight CPUs, all right, if you needed to do that. The virtual machines that you can create in total are limited to two times the number of real cores that you have on your box, though. Anything beyond that is kind of silly.
What is the benefit of telling a virtual machine that you've got eight cores available and there's only four physical cores?
You would want to do this to simulate cores if you wanted to do simulations of multi-threaded hardware or multi-threaded software, and potentially multiple virtual machines that all had multiple threaded software. So more for simulation than anything else.
Okay. So it would be an ideal to, if you're writing applications and you're trying to write for, let's say, a four-core machine and you got a two-core machine, you'd ideally tell it that
you could watch the behavior of your application, make sure it was exercising the cores and the performance was balanced.
Right? Is it best practices to put it into a container first? Or just run it flat?
A container. You mean the Solaris container?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's another layer. We're not even
Hold, don't even go there yet. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I was also wondering about in virtual cores. In my particular instance, I had a 16-core machine, and the OS, I could only see VirtualBox grabbing two or three cores at a time.
That's a setting. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to catch up. Go ahead.
No, I wanted to know if there was a way, if that was going to give me any extra by specifying more cores in the VM, would it use more of the available cores?
It depends on the operating system that you're running in the virtual machine and the software that's running in that virtual OS.
Okay.
Right. If it's multi-threaded, then yes, you could. Yes?
Can I ask a favor of all you guys? Can we get through the general stuff before we get these little detail things?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Because let's do it. I'm going to leverage what you just said, and thank you very much. I've been given a little more than an hour to do what I want to do today. So here's what I want to do. Blast through a couple more slides, all right? Then I want to kind of introduce and show you what I thought would be really cool for you to see. And then we'll wrap up with some of the discussion stuff. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
If you have a question that's very specific to exactly something I just said, ask it, and I'll either answer it right away or say, we'll talk about it later. Okay, the very most recent release is VirtualBox 3.08, and then this is the what's new. Now, I don't work for Sun anymore, right? So what right do I have to stand up and tell you the latest about what's new with VirtualBox? There are webinars that are free of charge that you can sign up for and virtually attend if you want to learn about VirtualBox, and they do them every month or two. I did this for one just last week, as a matter of fact, and that's where I got some of the information here. I'll show you where you can go and watch replays of some of those presentations if you'd like to see them. They're very cool. The VirtualBox 3.08 is the very most recent release. What they're most proud of here is that they feel the team has reached kind of a stability point. There are a lot of major architectural changes to VirtualBox 3, and the iterations up to 3.08 were really trying to address stability. So if you had been running the previous release of VirtualBox 2.24, which was considered a very stable release, the developers have the ability actually to make the pop-ups come up to tell you, hey, go get a new release. And if you're running 2.24 of VirtualBox, you weren't getting any of these pop-ups for 3.0, 3.01, 3.02. In a couple weeks, they're going to flip the switch and start telling people through the pop-ups that 3.08 is available now. So they feel pretty comfortable about stability. Support for disks greater than 2 terabytes in size.
Oh.
Okay, all of you with 2 terabyte disks can rejoice now. There are also big architectural changes in the networking stack. I won't talk about this in great detail, but there's a variety of different ways you can simulate networks with VirtualBox. One of the modes is called host-only networking. This allows you to create multiple virtual machines and connect them together with a virtual network that lives all inside the box. It's actually pretty complicated stuff because it implements a DHCP server, right, to give addresses to the machines, And they have to do that on four different platforms, you know, Windows, Linux, Solaris, and macOS. So this was kind of a tough, big problem that they think they've solved, and it seems to work pretty well. What's coming 3.1? Live migration, the ability to move a virtual machine while it's running from one place to another. They're going to fix or rework how the caching, memory caching works. Currently, you will see, if you switch from a virtual machine to a real task, like working on a compiler or something like that, and then switch back to VirtualBox, you can potentially see a lot of disk thrashing if you're exceeding how much memory that you have in your machine. So they're going to make VirtualBox manage its own memory cache and stay out of the host operating system cache. They think that will make it a little more pleasant on the desktop. They're going to introduce drivers to do paravirtualized I.O. for some of the I.O., which is supposed to really speed up the networking. There's currently video acceleration capability so that you could be on Linux and want to run a Windows-based game with accelerated graphics. You can actually do that today. It's still kind of early, but it seems to work pretty well. But what's coming in 3.1 is the ability to accelerate HD video, so you can do playback of HD video on a virtual platform. And the release date for this is, they say, November 32nd. It's a joke, right? Not my joke, their joke. This year. Okay, so let me show you very briefly what VirtualBox looks like. So that cord. Okay, what I'm doing here is bringing up, and I hope everybody can see, I can't change the screen here to make this bigger. This is the GUI for managing VirtualBox on a desktop computer. Okay? And so this should look pretty...
Warning! Warning! It's the wife!
You should hear the laugh then.
I should
shut my
door. I know. Woo! It's probably his wife.
That was good.
All right, let's do it.
That is a big hit at Lowe's, by the way. If you're at the hardware store. I'm sorry. Okay. If anybody ever asks, make sure that I said, "Oh no, it's just a joke." Okay. All right, so here's the GUI for VirtualBox, and let's pretend we're going to create a new virtual machine. Right, a wizard pops up. We have to give it a name. Oh, let's call it DSL, and the operating system. We're going to give it a hint that it's a Linux with a 2.4 kernel. There's a variety of different choices here, and I know I'm hurrying. 128 megabytes of memory. Let's use an existing hard. I don't need a. Continue.
So no hard drive.
Yeah, I actually created a no hard drive machine because what I'm just going to do now is ask me what I want to boot from, and I'll tell it that I want to boot from an ISO, which is actually an ISO for damn small Linux. And here's the, you can hit F12 if you want and specify which boot device you want to boot from, and I'll let it continue with the CD. Okay, so what's happening here is I'm booting the damn small Linux ISO image in a virtual computer, right? So what did VirtualBox do? We have a computer running an operating system, not mine, my current employer's. And inside of this, we are running an application, right? Called VirtualBox. And inside of this, what you're doing is creating virtual hardware. One of the things that you're creating is a virtual display adapter and a monitor attached to the video buffer in a video card. You with me? All right. So when you load DSL and it looks at the virtual hardware, it sees this adapter, it loads a video driver, and then Linux starts writing into the display space, and it gets what it thinks is written to a buffer that's being shown on the monitor, but what we're actually seeing it is running, it's showing inside this window.
That's yes. A virtual adapter, which means you could have multiple different ones to choose from? Yes, no?
Actually, yeah. Because VirtualBox supports multiple monitor support, but that's not what I want to talk about. The thing I want you to wrap your mind around is that when you're doing virtualization, this is a virtual platform, and if you load, let's say you loaded Windows here, right? What does Windows use to write bits to the screen, right? It uses the Win32 API. If you've got Linux here or Solaris, it uses X, right? So the X client programs write to the X server, which creates bitmaps here, right? All right. What I want to talk about is instead of using this to display locally, what I want to do is to pretend, or not pretend, to show you what happens when you run VirtualBox on a computer that doesn't have a monitor at all. And this is called headless mode. Okay, so the idea is this. You have a server sitting somewhere in a closet, in a rack, in a data center. Doesn't have a monitor attached to it. You don't have to go there to do the installation. But what you want is to have a virtual machine running there that you can attach to and make use of. Why would you want to do this? Anybody got any ideas?
My example, I have a mail server that's running inside of a Linux, running OpenBSD, running inside of a Linux box. And I don't need to see the mail server.
Good. There's a good one. Another one?
A company's outsourcing to I used to work for AMDA, who's outsourced for AT&T, and they had to do that type of thing. Since the employees weren't in the AMDAX building, AT&T
You know, the sky's the limit on this. You could do all, there's a variety of different reasons why you might want to do this. But VirtualBox has it built in, and I want to show you. This maybe just kind of get the wheels turning in your head. Let's see, I'm going to just whack the power. I don't care. All right, here's the part where my demo starts to get a little bit hairy. Let's hope that all this works. How many people have done SSH tunnels before?
Tonight.
All right, yeah. All right, so the more you compete with me for tunneling your stuff, the slower my demo goes. So kind of keep it light. I'm not going to say shut your laptop, right? Fair is fair. We're sharing, though. Just keep that in mind. So I have to make sure that I made one change. I think this will be okay. All right, so I am, if the network gods are smiling, connecting to the computer at home.
You better launch a web page first, otherwise you can't.
Yeah, you already connected.
I've done that recently, but I will.
Time's out after.
Oh, really?
5 p.m.
There's a demo killer.
Yeah, that's why I had to tunnel as well, is because my personal website is for whatever reason blocked here. So. There's nothing on my web page.
Change your site.
Oh, look at that! You dirty dog. Huh.
Very good.
And there was much rejoicing. All right. Where was I? All right. Meanwhile, back at the ranch. Much better.
Much better.
Hey. And.
Now, is that from the initial machine or is that from the.
Okay. So we haven't even gotten over here yet.
Okay.
We are. My laptop now has an SSH connection.
Your Windows environment.
This Windows computer, right. Okay. It's got an SSH connection and a tunnel to a computer that's at my house. And the computer in my house is a 1U server that's running, actually we're not even there yet. This is another box running Ubuntu, all right? But there's another computer that I have whose name is Slim.
Back up a second, Jeff.
Sure.
Why is this a tunnel and not just a regular SSH session?
You wanted the ports?
Oh, no. I'm SSHing, but I'm tunneling it so that I can do the rest of my demo.
Which is, you're going to use like...
I'm going to use, I'm going to do RDP sessions.
Okay, this is an SSH session, but it's tunneling edition.
That's right, yeah.
Right.
So let me SSH to slim. I didn't set my keys up yet. And, okay. So I'm now connected to a computer called Slim, and this is just a one-use server, has no monitor attached to it, right? And what it does have installed on it, though, is VirtualBox. And so let me show you trick number one. When you go home to do this, there is a suite of commands that is called vboxmanage. All right? Capital B, V, capital B, small O, small X, capital M. Oh, my gosh. Right? You can't type that fast. I don't care how many times you've done it. So, I'm not ever going to type that again. Alias BB equals BX bench. So, make the mental substitution. Every time you see me type VB, I'm really typing VBox manage. You with me on that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so VirtualBox VB manage list VMs. And what I just did is the command. Is it, are the colors good, or should I
just... Yeah, they're fine.
Okay, read. Okay. So, is it VirtualBox command line management interface, and it shows I have one machine currently installed called TinyXP. All right? This is the equivalent, what I just did. Darn it. Go away, go away. No, don't. What you're seeing in that terminal window is the command line equivalent to this, right? VBox manage list VMs. Well, there's DSL, Solaris 10, and XP, okay? So when you're working with this command line headless mode or command line version or even remotely, you have to start thinking in terms of, if I can do it with the GUI, I can do it with the command line, all right? The reason I'm telling you that is to give you some encouragement, because... if you do vbox manage-help, you get a lot of help.
Lots of help.
In fact, so much help that it is helpful to dump it to a text file so that you can enjoy it in all of its glory.
If you want to dupe a machine, you have to do vbox manage, you can't just copy the file like on that.
Yeah, there's a little bit more. Although there are people that are doing things like scripting, editing the XML files under the covers.
But you have to know what to edit.
Right. So this is very helpful to have handy. Okay, so I won't be referring to this too much anymore. I just wanted to show that to you. I have some cheats here. Actually, let's do something. All right, so we're going to do I want to start this virtual machine. So VBox manage dash start VM tiny XP. No. Oops. Be careful here. I'm not going to goof up my demo here. VBox headless.
There you go.
Start.
We can do a headless for VBox manage.
Yeah, but this is the way that I would like to do it for this. I'm skipping the step of showing you how you actually create the virtual machine. Now, before I launch it, I'm going to get ready with the remote desktop connection software that comes with Windows. There's also rDesktop for Linux that you may be familiar with or not. But it uses a protocol that's defined by Microsoft called RDP that's been kind of reverse engineered or what have you. And actually, VirtualBox implements kind of a superset of it called vRDP. All right. Bottom line is, this is a standard that's used all over the place, and I am just about ready to connect using that SSH tunnel to watch this machine boot. So, if I have this all going, I'm going to hit return here and start this running, and I'm going to whip over here and click connect. And here in this window, over an RDP connection, we're watching Windows XP boot on a headless server that's in my basement. Yes.
Is that what the difference is between VBox Manage and VBox Headless? Is the one starts the RDP connection or enables it?
Yes, and as Carl pointed out, you can also set a setting on an existing machine that's running to tell it to turn on RDP support. But VBox headless I find to be a little more straightforward. And I'm not sure if there's a difference between the two in practice.
Can you specify the ports it runs on?
Yes, you can. I'm actually telling it to do RDP over 3389. What I hope to do, and I think I've got time to do it, is to do another virtual machine here live, and we'll run it on 3390 so that you can see I have multiple virtual machines on my remote server and we can connect to them both. The OS that I'm actually using here... I'm being recorded. This is a small installation of Windows XP for demonstration purposes. And actually, so is everybody kind of follow? No, it's not. I have very little installed on here. I have everybody's favorite browser, the PayPal-friendly Firefox. Mm-hmm. And I think I even have the extension so that I should be able to I can't easily resize this window. But you get the idea, right? Everybody got your head wrapped around what's going on here, right? We're server remotely, it's showing us this display.
And you can't run that transparent mode.
No. Question about transparent mode. This is not over RDP. Not over RDP connection. Transport. Okay, so let's see if we can do this live. I am going to do something here. I started this up in the foreground, right? So my command line is kind of locked up. Type Control Z, which stops that process. And you'll notice that this is kind of dead. And I'm going to type BG, put that process in the background. All right, so we're still good now. So all I do is just get my command line back. Let's see. Now I'm going to go look at my cheat sheet a little bit. What do you have to do to create a virtual machine? Well, I just did an LS, and what you can see is that I have the ISO for Damn Small Linux right here, right? So let me... here we go. So VirtualBox, create VM, name, give it a name, and tell it I want to have it registered, which simply means put it in my database of what virtual machines are there. Then I have to go into, think of how we do it with the GUI, right? Let's see. I'm gonna so I'm going to specify what I want. I want to modify the virtual machine named DSL. I want to give it 128 megabytes of memory, ACPI on. I'm going to have one disk, a DVD to boot from, one NIC. It's going to use NAT for its networking, 8 megabytes of VRAM, and the OS type, I'm telling it, is Linux 24. That's the equivalent of clicking on all those little buttons in the GUI. Now, I'm going to modify this virtual machine to run RDP over port 3390 instead of 3389, which will come into play momentarily. And finally, I'm going to tell it that the DVD I want it to use is this file that's in my home directory. All right. Now, again, get ready to prime the pump here. And let's fire up another... let's see. Change this port to 90. Oops. Order is important here.
You got a one in front of that.
Yeah, I changed the. I'm actually routing 133.139. Okay, so this looks the same as what I did at the beginning of my presentation, except this time we're booting again. This is happening remotely, and so I have on that server in the basement a couple of virtual machines. One of them is running XP. One of them is running. Damn Small Linux.
Do you actually see a performance hit when you fire up the second session?
Performance is all kind of relative. It matters, you know, what's happening on that computer. Let's see here.
You'll see it if you look for it.
Yeah. Whoops. BG. Sometimes you don't have to. I almost did PR stat. So I'm running top right now. And I see two VBox headless sessions. One is using a ferocious amount of CPU time. One is lagging behind. They're kind of popping around. And it's a little bit hard, perhaps, to judge performance here because we're doing, you know, two things over a pipe, over a tunnel. Oh, and this is the other thing. If you do this, you'll find that until you load the guest extensions, which are the things that make the mouse and resizing the desktop very sexy, your pointer can kind of lag. It's very frustrating. And in fact, it may be so frustrating, I'm not even going to try and monkey with this.
Well, with any remote desktop thing, I mean, that's normal. Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. My virtual machines are still running. Okay, so now for the last part of the demo. And this almost works. I'm so sad that this is, I have to say it's almost, but not completely. Let me pop over to my slides for a second. Okay, so we're doing headless, and you've seen that I can go to a command line to configure my machines and start them up and shut them down, right? Well, that's really cool. People in this room know how to do command line stuff, but the rest of the world, not so much. And VMware, for example, is a kind of a platform. They've got remote management down pretty well to a science. There's tools that let you do things in a browser. So that point has not been lost on the VirtualBox community. There is a project, an open source project called VirtualBox Web Console. And here's the URL where you can go kick the tires. It's early release, not fully functional, but I'm going to try to show it here and we'll see how far we get. There's a couple of prerequisites. You have to have Python and JSON installed on the machine, and also you're going to have VirtualBox installed on. If you go to this website, and I'll show it to you in a minute, you can check out a read-only copy of the code using Subversion. And what this allows you to do is have a GUI for that server in my basement or what have you. Okay? So the RDP stuff has been available for years. The final part that really completes it that's cool is it answers the question, how do you actually do the graphics so you can see what's on that remote server? And built into this web console scheme is an RDP client that's written in Flash. So what that means is if you have a browser that has Flash, you can do a remote console and then click a button and actually see the screen using Flash. That's the part that doesn't work. And it has to do, I think, with the tunneling. I can't tell the Flash tool to operate over the tunnel. If you really want to see it, I can go to log me in and you can look at my home computer and look at it there. But I'll have to do a little bit of hand waving. I apologize. I didn't know this wasn't going to work until I got here. Localhost. Oh, wait, I got to start it up. You dummy. Let's go back here. CD VBox. Python VBox web server. Okay, so now I'm starting up this web console tool, which is also going to then spawn a web server process that I can reach. And I can't remember. Let's see.
Well, it's not localhost.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's my first tunnel.
To tunnel.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There it is. Okay. Wow. All right, so now, again, I'm going over the SSH tunnel. It's cached. Oh. Thanks, though. Okay, so you can create users. There's a command, webserver.py, add user, blah, blah, blah. So I have my own login, and when I click log on, what they're doing here is building what looks very much like the VirtualBox GUI. And it shows that both of my virtual machines, by golly, are running. Let's do something cool. I've never done this before. Let's see, the DSL is running on 90. So let's take a peek at it again. And monkey with my Windows. So you can see that I have damn small Linux running, and if I pause, any degree of luck, it should actually pause the virtual machine, which it does. I can start it again. Now you can see there's my pointers there. Let's go ahead and try stopping it and see what happens. And now I'm asked, do I want to close the virtual machine or just power it off? We'll just plug. And what that did then is told me, it would have been better, I guess, to do an ACPI shutdown. Would have been a better demo, I'm sorry. Now the part that would be cool if it was working through my tunnel is this button that says console. When you click this connect button, you're going to get to see actually the beginnings of the console. See this RDP web control? If you're at home or somewhere not going through a tunnel, you actually get the virtual machine shows up right here in your browser, and that's being done with Flash. I really wanted that part to work because that's the part that I think is kind of cool. All right, questions?
Are you familiar with NX server? And if so, would it replace all that?
I'm sorry, which server?
NX server.
NX server will let you. NX server is like drawing a blank. VNC,
yeah.
Which is sort of a remote display. So for just remote display technology, this is actually kind of one level deeper. It has remote display technology, but it's looking at a virtual machine.
I do that every clear night to a headless server.
Right.
That's running a Windows virtual machine that shows up on my laptop just fine.
Right.
That's VMware now.
Right. Yeah, that VMware is kind of like remote screen sharing, if you will. And this is very much remote screen sharing, but it's sharing a virtual machine. Remember, I've got a server at home in the basement that I could have VNC running, so I could look at that Ubuntu desktop if I wanted. But that same computer is also running XP in a virtual machine that I'm looking at in another window. And it was running damn small Linux in another window on another virtual machine. So one computer is running three operating systems all at the same time.
I only do two operating systems. I don't have a need for the third window, but I'm still
looking at it. Oh, I see what you're saying. You're looking at it on your screen.
I'm looking on my laptop.
Sure.
That
works too.
You're looking at a virtual machine.
He's running VirtualBox on his computer, right? You're running on that remote computer? Is he running VirtualBox?
The remote computer is running Ubuntu.
Okay.
With VMware.
VMware, okay.
Okay.
All right.
So I go in with NX client, and it's also run NX server. I log in with NX client from a Windows machine, and then I got a little icon. I click on that brings up VMware, whatever. I say start this virtual machine. The virtual machine pops up there, and I control everything.
Here's the difference, and I'll tell you this is. What you're doing is perfect, right? It solves your needs. What this does that would be different from yours is, let's say I wanted to give somebody access to run Quicken on XP, right? Your solution, right? They see Ubuntu and XP in a window and Quicken inside of that. So they not only have to navigate Windows, but they also have to navigate the wrapper that they can see. They have access to your Linux box. This solution compartmentalizes so that you give a person view only to XP and not what's running it on the outside.
Click on full screen.
Full screen, but they can't see my Linux stuff. If the only thing I told somebody is you can log in and here's you'll get XP in a window, they can't go monkey around with the Linux that runs on the outside. That's the difference.
So that if they screw up an XP, you just rebuild it through within Ubuntu.
Yeah, remember, it's all just tools and toolkits and different uses for different purposes. You have a question?
What's the cost of this?
The cost of this is absolutely free, unless you want to deploy it widely across an organization. But you as an individual user has the right to download this for free. Comes in two flavors. The full-featured one that has a couple of things that are not open source, that are USB support, or folder sharing from the host and the guest operating system. Mm-hmm. There is a completely open source version that omits those few features. And they also license this for embedded use for like OEMs that want to put it in products. Okay. Yes?
Now, is RDP in the open source edition these days? Because it didn't used to be.
No, right? It's not. That's one of the other things it's not.
Still
yeah, correct. So I'm using the version that has the proprietary bits hung on it. I saw your hand next.
What about the snapshot? How many concurrent snapshots?
I haven't played with snapshots very much because, as far as I can tell, it almost was a point in time that lets you roll back. You couldn't like arbitrarily say, now I want to run this one, now I want to run that one. Yeah. So I honestly don't know.
You actually have to merge them. Otherwise, I mean, you can't. The snapshots are snapshots just like our snapshot, except that they're a cumulative snapshot. So you would basically make a snapshot, you like it, then you merge it to the previous one.
So I don't know if you've had a lot of experience doing snapshots. I'm sorry, I haven't messed with it too much. My virtual machines seem to be kind of ephemeral. They don't hang around for very long. Yes?
How much memory does VBox use?
It really depends on how much memory you allocate to the virtual machines and how much they in turn are going to use.
Just VBox itself.
I honestly don't know. When I create a virtual machine that has a gigabyte of memory, the additional overhead of having that running in the first place is kind of like somewhat more of a rounding error. And by the way, when you're running VirtualBox, once you start up a virtual machine, you can close the GUI. It doesn't have to be running. So maybe that would save you a little bit extra memory.
What's your machine at home drive? What's that machine you're running on?
This laptop has 2 gigabytes of memory. The server that I have at home has 4. The virtual machines that I'm running, I think the XP one I gave 512 meg, and the DSL was running 128 meg. It's pretty tiny. Darn small.
What could this be, the processors?
I have no idea.
So, memory's
the main thing. Yeah, memory's the main thing. Obviously, faster CPU, faster performance. The bigger question of performance is comparing this to some of the competition. I'm told that this really holds its own, you know, as long as you're not doing a lot of graphic intensive stuff. If it's primarily compute intensive, the performance is quite good compared to running it on a real non-virtualized platform.
Yes. If you're going to worry about hardware requirements, you also need to think about whether or not your VMs are going to be using a lot of disk reads and writes. If you've got heavy disk I/O, and you don't have fast disks or a set of disks behind the VMs, it's going to slow very quickly.
By the way, I'll give you a tip. When you're going to use this, if you're ever going to do an installation, particularly on a laptop that has a slow hard drive anyway, have the ISO that you're installing from on a memory stick or on a different disk than the hard drive that you're installing to. Otherwise, the thing's thrashing. Read, write, read, write, read, write. But if you have 2 separate disks, the I/O is quite a bit faster.
By the virtual name, it's emulating the hardware that's underneath.
That's correct.
Is there any potential for you to emulate any other hardware or architecture?
No, this is limited specifically to x64 architecture. 32 and 64 bit, and will support 32 and 64 bit guests. It will even run 64 bit guests on 32 bit hardware.
Doesn't it also allow writing the calls to OpenGL to hardware?
Yes, although I would say that's somewhat still experimental, but they do have support for OpenGL 2.0.
So wait until
0.1. Yes.
Okay.
Does it emulate the processor, or does it drop down into the actual processor code? I mean, I'm thinking QEMU, I think, does that.
I don't think it does complete emulation. I mean, it tries to run native code, but it has to do kind of some of the thunking and rewriting and stuff on the fly that all these typically have to do.
Depends on the processor.
It depends on the processor whether you have the extensions turned on.
And could you then load, let's say, Windows 95 if you had legacy software?
Sure. In fact, my favorite solution is I have an old Magellan GPS that wants to have serial port. Well, I don't have a serial port anymore, but I do have a serial to USB adapter. And so the software that I have with the Macs that run on it is for Windows 98, which I also don't have anymore. But I have a virtual machine that runs Windows 98, happily mapping the USB to serial adapter through, so that XP thinks it has a serial port attached to my GPS. And, you know,
so you can run legacy software.
That's right. I can stave off the purchase of a GPS for another, at least until Christmas. And if my wife calls back, you can tell her that. Who can attend? Yes?
Earlier you said cannot run Mac on there. Is that a technical limitation or legal?
That's illegal. Actually, legal and technical. There is some stuff that, and I might want to ask you about that. There's some hardware in Macintosh hardware that makes it special.
Okay.
And I that could be emulated, right? Technically, it could be done, but the developers are like, right, as long as it's a legal deal, they're not going
to. I was just curious because VMware, I had a user that I had to write some scripts for, and I got tired of interrupting her to take over a machine to write this script. So I went out and I found a hearted image that I was able to run in VMware to write my scripts and just take the script over there.
Yeah, I think Google might yield some solutions for how to do that, but officially it's not in support.
But OS X are hacked versions of OS X.
Out of
the box, you cannot install under
that. That might have been what I ran into too, because I was trying, I got disks from her, and I was trying to install it in a VMware session, I couldn't. Eventually I got tired of it, and I went to the Pirate Bay, and I found just the actual image, and I copied it down, and then I was able to write my script and deleted it right after.
Research, right?
I was supporting a Mac user. They can kiss my ass if they want to sue me. It should have just worked in the first place.
Yeah. Any more questions? So for those of you that wanted the kind of the VirtualBox 101, I apologize, because I didn't think that there would be so many people that had never done this before. But I encourage you to give it a try. Oh, let me get back to the slide and show you like how you can get started with some of this stuff. Do I need to do this? I guess I could close all this away.
If you use VirtualBox on Ubuntu, be careful, because they like to update the VirtualBox before they'll update the kernel modules. Ooh. So I screwed myself so many times by forgetting. Go ahead, install all the updates. It would update my kernel, it would update VirtualBox, but then it wouldn't update the modules for that, and then I'd go to use my virtual machine and be screwed until they release something.
It's called DKMS. Install DKMS, the extensions for DKMS, and it will automatically update the VirtualBox kernel when it installs a new kernel.
Or you could pin
your
package to prevent it from being updated until you wanted it to. Right, Stan?
Right.
There is also a tool called Module Assistant, which will rebuild the VBox kernel modules for you.
Yes?
Does VBox run, or can it be installed on the metal, or does it have to be installed on the metal?
It has to be installed in a guest operating system. It's a Type 2 virtualization solution. It doesn't run on bare metal.
Which means that it's going to pretty well support anything that the OS supports.
Right. Yeah. But it can't do fast I/O natively, except that's what they're going to be doing with the paravirtualized I/O driver. So it all gets kind of hairy and mushy. Bottom line is, commercial virtualization solutions or solutions that run on bare metal will potentially give you better hardware performance and better isolation of mapping of resources to operating systems. But for kind of dynamic, hey, let's try this, this is actually a pretty cool solution. Yes?
You mentioned something earlier about USB being a proprietary solution or in the commercial version or something.
Right. That's one of the components of VirtualBox that if you download the full, kind of the full version, I can't remember the names they give to the two different types.
OSC is the open source edition, and the regular one is the one
that's everything. This is the whole enchilada here, and you can see there's a button here that says USB. This lets me tell VirtualBox that the host operating system should let a USB device that I plug into, like a hard disk or serial adapter, it should present it to this virtual machine.
Can we click on the display?
Can I do have time to play with it before the ship the computer after my daughter, but it said that the USB would connect only if the user had permissions down in the Linux. So
right.
So I just got to figure out how to do that again.
Yeah. That gets fun. That's why they call some of those things exercise for the student, right? Mm-hmm. You know that? So it could be a character building experience. Yes.
When you create the RDP connection to it, can you through the Windows RDP you can bring over your local disk drives and things like that? Does that work?
I'm sorry. What? Say that again.
You can bring over your local resources like disk drives, printers, devices.
The RDP is only a connection to the running machine.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Basically, it's RDP protocol being
basically with the Winit, you can share your local resources to the machine that you're remoting into. Right. So, like, if you wanted to, you could map your local hard drive to the remote machine so that you can copy files between that remote machine and your local dock.
I don't believe that that's available for this.
Yeah, I don't think the virtual box supports that.
Now, I do know, I'm not going to mess this. The one thing I do know that works is remote sound. I had my speaker turned off, but when you boot up XP, you get that awful, you know, music. So that works. For better or worse, but I don't know about some of the other devices. Yes.
Can you nest them? Can you?
You should try that and tell us if the nest is
tomorrow.
And
see how much trouble we get into.
Oh! Here's a little piece of trivia. So Windows 7 has this XP emulation mode that does something that potentially can interfere with VirtualBox's use of the processor's hardware features. So you got to watch out for running Windows 7 with that XP compatibility bag. And
what about 2008? You know,
5 years from now, I'll be able to answer that question.
And at what point are you saying if you have Windows 7 and you put the VirtualBox on it, you don't want to have XP compatibility mode?
Yeah,
yeah.
I believe this is. They said this at the tail end of the call, and I believe what they said was, if you have XP something running in that XP compatibility bag inside of Windows 7, that would prevent VirtualBox from making use of the same hardware features of the processor. So that might be a potential concern. So
Windows 7 is using the actual chip, the processor's virtual extension. So if Windows 7 is using it for XP compatibility, then
Carl asked a question, and let's see if I can find it. I hadn't even shown any of these settings here. There are system settings, and this is where you can say how much memory you've got and whether you want to emulate a floppy, blah, blah, blah. Here's the pusher for processor emulation. So I could tell it I want to emulate 32, and you can see this turns red here, right? Mm-hmm. No. It says you can do 1 or you can do 2. So 2 is allowed, but anything more than 2, it slaps your hand and says no. So even on this laptop, it only has a single CPU, I could emulate a dual processor machine.
And extended features?
That's the process, the PAE. That's the feature that Windows 7's compatibility thing would not work.
I was thinking.
Oh, no, or is it the VT?
Yeah, it'd probably be that.
I apologize.
PAE is the feature that allows a 32-bit processor to access more than 4 gig of RAM and acts as the
Okay. So that's...
Yeah, neither of those being the virtualization extensions.
Okay. So what are they...
NX is what? NX is what?
No execute.
One of the things that I've used VirtualBox for is to set up... Well... Some computers can boot off a network using technology called Jumpstart. So I've actually used VirtualBox and setting up virtual machines that have internal networking. So one is a Jumpstart server, and then another VirtualBox was actually, you know, booting and loading the OS from another one. So you can kind of try it at home. And then when it's working, you got it set up, then you can bring it to wherever you want to and Jumpstart servers off of it for real. Yes?
I did want to point out a nice feature I found in VirtualBox that I never really found any info about it. I just kind of stumbled upon it. It has its built-in DHCP server for doing like the NAT networking, but it also has a built-in TFTP server. So if you throw like PXE Linux in a certain directory, it'll serve it up to your virtual machine.
Where did you find that?
I don't remember. I was actually trying to do testing of a netboot image I created in VBox on my laptop by bridging my wireless and the VirtualBox networking, which I fought with for hours and didn't work. And I stumbled across this info. Somebody said, "Oh, well, you can just drop this file here in VirtualBox, and you can netboot."
Wow.
It's like, wow, that's wild. So yeah, VirtualBox has a built-in TFTP server. You just drop the file in a certain directory, and the DHCP server will send the necessary bits in the response saying, here's my TFTP server, and point the guest at.
This would be really nice to see one.
Let's see what I can do. Yeah.
There's a couple more things on the slide I want to point out here. How many people use IRC, Internet Relay Chat? Okay, if you want to talk to people and ask questions and get like the developers to answer, go to IRC channel VBox. They actually wrote the box for VBox.
Is it free note?
Free note.
Speaking of IRC, we kind of got a slew of IRC channel on free note as well. Join /SLUG. There's a few people being it.
I just want to get on there.
Once every couple of weeks, I get on.
I just leave it running in a screen session on my web server, so I treat it like a message board of sorts.
IRC science screen.
It doesn't scroll up enough that doesn't work.
I don't use percolate here.
No, if something happened, I got logging, so I could always just access it that way.
I've got like 4 years of logs on mine.
There was a bot log.
Yeah, I thought about setting up like a CGI IRC to point directly to there and just putting it on my web server so people can
use.
To use.
What did I do?
So you can put it on you.
I do know how to spell it there. You think? Hey!
There's
hi!
Oh! Did I show him there?
All right, anyway, this is cool. So I got my... This is just cool. I got my own Google Voice. How many people have Google Voice phone number?
Right? Oh, shit. Awesome.
So I went to get 314 and show me any number as long as it spells at the last three letters G-O-O. Cool, I got it. 246-9466. It's Goo. It's my old nickname from high school. Found out later it spells Ahoy Goo. 3 or 4
Ahoy Goo.
It's nothing to do with VirtualBox. I just want to tell
cooler.
You.
Yeah.
So get your phone number now. So anyway, So there's a lot of good traffic here, and people kind of know what they're talking about. If you have questions, yes.
Back to this question of use of local resources. Can you cut and paste out of the virtual machine into the...
Yes, if you install what are called the guest extensions. When you install a virtual machine, one of the resources you'll have available to you is a CD image that you can mount within the virtual machine. You install either a package on Solaris or run a script on Linux.
That would be a nice demo right now.
If
I'm showing how to do it.
Okay. Yes, yes.
If you have a dual boot machine that's running Windows and running Linux, could you take install VirtualBox on Linux and then do you still have to install your other operating system on VirtualBox, or can you somehow have it look to the other drive and pick up?
You can, but it doesn't always work out very well.
If it's a separate physical drive and not just another partition, you can point VirtualBox at that other drive.
That's what I'm asking.
But then you have the issue of drivers in Windows, so you have to... It's Windows would probably not work back and forth. So you'd have to do like sysprep to get it back to base drivers and then boot it up in VBox.
Right, because Windows is going to say, oh, I'm licensed for this machine, now I'm on another one. You need to register this. You have 3 days.
Licensing. I don't know that I've ever had to deal with that in XP.
Mm-hmm.
Speak into the microphone.
Just run your Windows in a virtual machine to work that double boot.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been doing for years.
Well, no, I'm just saying, would you have to reinstall everything on the virtual machine as opposed to just, well, it's already built. Can't I just point to it?
If it's Linux, you could do it.
Yeah, that's called physical to virtual. The VMware has some tools to do it, but they're not very mature anywhere else.
Yeah, and Windows just does everything they can to make it hard.
System Journals actually just came out with a tool that will do that.
Reebok?
It's like something to VNC.
Is there any version from
what I've heard on it, that people are using it to do like VMware. I haven't heard of Reebok yet, but something probably.
I know VMware has tools to do it. Gary was telling me about that a year ago.
Yeah.
What's this? P2V stuff
you're talking about? Yeah,
P2V.
I'm told now that
VirtualBox can import virtual machines from that were created on VMware. They use the same format, so technically you can. And there's places online where you can go download, you know, pre-created virtual machines without having to go through an installation. So if you wanted to kick the tires on a distro, you can just download it and run it.
The thing you have to be careful with the importing VMware images, and I found this out the hard way, is that, at least with Windows, you end up with something goofy with the Windows hardware abstraction layer. There's something with the way VMware translates as opposed to how VBox translates.
Just put an X there.
So you can end up with...
Well, nobody in this room would be running virtual, or XP on, or Windows on a virtual machine anyway, so we don't have to worry about that.
You have 10 minutes left. What's the website before you run out of time?
Yeah, virtualbox.org. Thank you. And I'm going to go to the browser before I finish, and I'll show you that and one other thing. Just because this boots fastest for Carl's benefit, I make this full screen, right? So we're looking at this XP and Teletubbies Hill, my wife calls this. there's a little ribbon at the bottom of the screen that still gives you control to the wrapper around this, if you will, right? So I'm going to choose from the devices list. There's a choice at the bottom that says install guest editions. And when I click that, a virtual CD actually was inserted into the drive. It hasn't even shown up on the desktop yet. And then Windows is taking over and trying to launch, you know, the startup application, blah, blah, blah. So it's just a couple of clicks, and then the guest editions would install. They actually are already installed. Here's where you can turn on this DirectX 3D support, which is, they say, experimental, but it would let you run Doom on Linux or what have you.
Or you can run a Libra on it.
Now, one of the benefits of this is you start up Windows in an 800 by 600 window, and you just take it and drag it, Linux or Windows, whatever, with the guest edition. You can drag it to open it up to any size. It automatically resizes.
Oh.
You can do what's called seamless mode.
What do Linux people do, right? You install Linux in a virtual machine, and you go and you try to change your xorg.conf file so you can do the resolution you want, and you will beat your head against the wall trying to get that to work. You'll open control panels. You'll look in the system settings. You'll type sudo till your fingers bleed. Install the guest editions, resize the window, and it just works. Trust me. Try that first, and I guarantee you. I have scars, mental scars from that. Yes?
Question. I think I'm using 3006 of VirtualBox in Ubuntu, and now 3008 is out.
Yes.
Any caveats before I upgrade? Can I just install 3008 and... Things should work, or do I need to uninstall, reinstall?
I have to. Anybody want to take this one?
On my desktop at home, I've gone from 3.01 to 3.06 without a problem. I haven't gotten on the machine to take it to 3.08. Typically, I find very few problems. When you restart VirtualBox, it converts your images to the new version. It tells you one thing, we're converting it to a new version. I don't know what it does, but it doesn't stay in there very long. And
that typically only happens between major versions. It's like 2 to 3.
Right.
The only problem that I ever really had in doing weird things was pausing a machine, you know, you can save the state of a machine so you don't have to boot it, right? Pausing a machine and then moving things around and throwing things away, like ISO images that were mounted. Mm-hmm. And you go to start the machine that says, I can't find it. And there was one time, and I don't know if it was just because I was in a hurry, but I realized there were files on a virtual machine I couldn't get to because I couldn't get the combination of things back to make it happy again. So beware moving ISOs. Keep them in a safe place that you know is there. And if you're not using them, use them and detach them. Or shut down a machine if it has anything precious on it because you may not be able to start it up again. Yes?
Two questions.
All right.
First, you talked about files in the VM that you couldn't get back, couldn't recover. Is it possible to mount the disk images as a loopback device?
I have not tried. I don't know.
I think there's some conversion that's needed. I don't think it'll work. Just
there headers on.
It's not a raw disk image.
Yeah.
Because there's also, you know, that stuff, like, it'll grow as you put stuff in.
Yeah.
So it's not just a raw disk image. I think there's some scripts to convert to a raw disk image.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Google for that. I think people have done it. But if you thought you wanted to, I don't think I'd do the dynamically expanding disk. I would just say, you know, fixed size.
No. Parallels has a browser that lets you get into their virtual disk without.
They're just cool. So.
Yeah.
You get 15 seconds to ask your second question, you get 15 seconds to answer.
Network devices.
Yes.
Some network cards tend to work better in guests than others.
Yes, I found actually the default card for XP to get ready for this didn't work. It was, and I had to switch to the Intel card. There's four modes of networking. One, the default is NAT. It assumes that you're going to use this machine as a client to go out and do things. But you can do a different kind of networking, whose name escapes me, that basically says I want my virtual box to be a peer on my network.
Bridge.
So it looks jizzed. Is that what they call it now?
Bridge mode.
And that's really cool. That's what you use to do, you know, connecting. Well, there's an internal network, but that's for connecting machines in within themselves.
But bridged often doesn't work with wireless.
Okay.
It does in VirtualBox 3.
I was going to say, they fix a lot of stuff with Bridge Mode. Bridge Mode with 2 used to do stuff like tell the Cisco switch, hey, I'm doing stuff that's illegal, and it shut your port off.
Well,
very embarrassing in the office.
Actually, I had Bridge working, I thought, pretty well with wireless, but when I connected my virtual machine to the hotel Wi-Fi system, I had to log in. Then when I used my real machine connected to the hotel Wi-Fi system, I had to log in again. Each time, it would bump the other one off the hotel Wi-Fi.
When I get home tonight, I will send on the discuss list a pointer to try to head you in the right direction to see these VirtualBox Live webinars that you can watch.
Cool.
You can kind of just scroll through and read the slides and then turn the audio on to hear different things. But that might be very handy if you've never used VirtualBox before. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hunger. There's completely unofficially, we should have announced this earlier, there's a number of people who might be found over